use these words, what do we say?
Okay. Using the term that you said in the
a master.
Or a being.
It simply means a human being who has mastered the ability to live what he says. Don't make it more than what it's not. Once they have lived what they have said, they have command over the atom by a spoken voice. And therefore they have no other alternative than to function here as a compassionate being. Now, we the individuals who haven't mastered it look to them as a superior being. They look at us as a brother who doesn't want to accept responsibility. So they don't look at you as any student. You're a brother of theirs that don't want to accept the responsibility of your spoken word. So they're going to dump it back at your head and tell you, don't call them masters. All they have done is master the art of living the spoken word. And they want us to accept that responsibility and make it a living experience for ourselves.
And they set the example.
Alright,
so if a brother...
In other words, they are an elder brother.
Okay. If an elder brother is working with the son on the atomic level, the alphabet brother,
right?
Can take the machine or this atomic structure with them. They don't leave any cleanup. They don't leave any residue. Mm-hmm. Then there's a brother who is, if I understood you correctly earlier, that's working in the gas loop, who leaves a form, but the form doesn't decompose. Mm-hmm. Can that brother, having left this non-decomposing 144 elements on their lab, rematerialize in 144 elements that go?
Yes. Because what? Zeraxin is unlimited.
Zeraxin
is unlimited.
So then, okay. So then, what is, why would one brother leaving no cleanup, and another choose to leave form that doesn't decompose, and may or may not come back to the cup? What's the purpose of the difference?
That is to satisfy the omnipotent. The option is millions of ways to take it. But what the onlooker needs to satisfy or give them some confirmation or hope, this is what they may leave to them. Now, some individuals leave the body for others to experiment in. Others take it so you don't know the ever existing or the presence of your imagination. This is their option. Now, some remain here, in going no place, but only visible or invisible when they need to disappear. So this is their option. What they're trying to convince their brothers and sisters is, once you live the spoken word, you are a free individual. Free men are lord of the self. And to be lord of the self and to be free is to take it with you, leave it to show that it doesn't really break down and you have the option to erupt it all over the place, or be visible or invisible as you beat me up, sorry.
Donna, what if I go on vacation? I leave my body to somebody who either has to bury it in the ground or learn it. What is that? In other words, why would I want to have that? concentration towards something, but if somebody else has to do something with them, don't they?
Yes.
I mean, if other people have to,
yes,
you know, the thing or the miracle thing has to do.
But it's missing if you're actually running.
So
do you want to leave it around for others to believe or be convinced that you were saying the truth when you were here with them? Or do you want to take it with you another puzzle in your mind? You never did come, but it's possible you might have been here because your old clothes are still hung in the closet. And this is what the scripture looked like. Or he got all his body to show that you actually were there. This is the puzzling truth. But this is your option. Once you have arrived at the freedom of the spoken word over the atom, however you want to leave some type of conviction for your brothers and sisters, this is your option. You are not restricted. The only time you are restricted is if you lust after you can. And then they say, well, you didn't make it. But if you don't lust, they know you've made it, and therefore you have the option again of xeroxing it. And if you take it to you, and they don't have the actual evidence you were here to show outside of your old clothes or a picture of what you look like, this again is your option. If you want to be visible or invisible, whenever you need to be, no matter how long you want to stay under your sanitation, this is your option.
Well, the body is very different as well. So you're saying a person honestly could still have the body buried under the ground
and never rot.
And never rot. But if it does rot,
then you didn't make it.
Okay, and what about if it's cremated? If
it's cremated, you can xerox it again. Now, the new picture is xeroxed, that's what it cremated. Then the heritage is xeroxed, that's what it cremated. To show that the xeroxing principle overrides the fixation. Now, there was a guy by the name of Kabir. He lived a long time ago, around 1600, and he went around trying to unite Hindus and Muslims, because they had two different belief systems, into accepting the one God in themselves. Now for years he preached to both of them, and finally one day he decided he was going to leave the body. So he stood up in front of them, gave a long lecture on the unity of God, and lay down there in the tomb. Now the Hindus said right to the crowd of people, he was us. He is one of us. And by our rights and belief system, we must cremate the body. The Muslim God said, oh no, he was with us. He lived and he taught us. And by our concept, we bury the body. After many hours of arguing back and forth to bury or cremate the body, Kabir got up and looked at them, shook his head, and disappeared right in front of their eyes. But he left them two roses in his coffin. The Hindus took their roses and cremated it. The Muslims took their roses and buried it. The coffin is too big, they emptied it, and they don't know where the hell Kabir got. See what fixation will do to the reality of ourselves. But Kabir lived. The records of his existence, and the people who were helped by Kabir have records, but the body of Kabir is not present. But they have the buried rose, and they have the burnt up ashes of the other rose. And they have the coffin still there in the Middle East where Kabir lived, and nobody could see. Now he was not the only one that did that. Jesus did the same thing too. But he didn't leave nothing else but cloth, which we call the shroud of Turin now. That is what his face is supposed to look like, or his body, where the actual perforation of the cut or the nails were, and that evidence that he was here on the cross. So many of these men who realize that their brothers and sisters are not willing to accept the reality of themselves as yet, would leave something tangible to confuse them or impress them or take it to them so that they don't have any way to vouch for their existence. But this is their option, their freedom. But if it falls under three categories, to leave something or not to leave something, or to be present among them and only visible when it's necessary to be visible. And the fourth situation, everybody is subject to that rut.
And now we're being lost.
That's right.
So if our apple does anything but say, what you just seem to be, if the apple does anything but stay firm or grow, then that the nature of that apple would work, would change. In other words, if you could hang on to it long enough and it didn't work, it would reconstitute.
But
I come back to life.
All right, here's a story not too long ago. A young couple married many years ago and were celebrating their 85th birthday together. And the minister who was remarrying them in the celebration knew them to be very old couples. And when they came and asked them to do the ceremony over in memory of the anniversary of their marriage, to his amazement, as soon as he pronounced them man and wife, their whole physical anatomy and physiology went right back to 22 years ago. And there are actually on record only people that have ever seen anything like that. Now they're asking the scientific facts, what do really happen? Can the human body revert back to a younger body after living so long in love and harmony together? And the answer is yes. Every human body has a lot of the DNA and RNA. Instant rejuvenation is possible for a human body at 84 years of age. But at 82 years of age, you have to live 2 years in front of this one love. All the things that the world has done to you, those 2 years you have to totally forgive them. And you don't have a single thought in your mind for any kind of compensation or revenge. And at the end of the 84th year, your whole body and the DNA and RNA will go right back to prison. So that's a fact, not that you do that. The salamander effect. The salamander effect. You know what a salamander is?
Mm-hmm.
Alright. You've heard of it. It's an animal or a reptile that has the ability of revitalizing itself after it's gone through its first mature life form. And it replaces any part that has been cut off. So it will never be minus a part of its environment. And your body has it because you are a print off of the same principle of the DNA, narrative, lack of belief. But the only reason why we don't seem to have the capacity to reactivate these principles that the animal kingdom or the bird kingdom carries in them to do naturally is because we, being endowed in spoken word, to have command over the atom, did not live the spoken word. And therefore, all the misapplied decisions that you've made, you have to account for. They are no sin. They're only misapplied decisions. So a great sister once said to me, Adana, when you know God, all your good and lousy decisions are fulfilled. Then, thank you, sister. I appreciate that very much. And I don't have anything to worry about anymore. So when you know God, that's when you know the truth, that the mouth is the key to the apple. And whatever you say, it's going to crystallize. Then every good or lousy decision must be crystallized. So you don't have anything to worry about. It's there for you to live. And if you look back, you made a lot of lousy decisions when you were young, and you're trying to make good ones now as you get more mature.
Isn't there also a point with being asked
we were told by our brother how to ask, but we never do it. That's why we never get the right answer. Brother Jesus told you how to ask. Do you remember what he said when he was in the body? How to ask? In his name, right, because whatever you ask, when you retreat into your innermost chamber, well, you know, your innermost chamber and your heart is a solid gold. There is no more innermost chamber than that. It's so intimate with you, you couldn't go any closer than getting down to the nitty-gritty of what is bugging you. And if you really ask in his name, it's done unto you. I don't want to sound crude, but many of us go to that solid board and don't get no relief. But if you ask in Jesus' name, you sure get a bowel movement. A lot of people did do it too and prove it and get a good, healthy body to give. Because I saw them come around like that and get to the banner. I know what you mean now. But literally speaking, if you slow down your brain and sit down in your room and ask what is your highest good in the name of the Christ principle, I say this happens to you because you're offensive. Initiate or non-initiate.
So instead of asking words, something specifically qualified.
If you knew what your highest good would be, you wouldn't ask for it. It would always be obvious to you. But since you don't know what your highest good is, you have to ask it and let it occur. So that's what you have to build up in your mind. And whenever you ask in the creative consciousness that your highest good be revealed to you, it will be revealed to you. But if you're willing to take the time out to analyze what can be the highest good for a human being, you'll find that the highest good for a human being is to breathe. Think of it. So why ask for your highest good when you're already breathing? Then why not do what? Love the Lord for the opportunity to have become you to breathe. So that's why Jesus said, all of these commandments are great, but I give you a better one. And the better one was, love the Lord thy God with all of the mind, don't fall asleep now. Don't worry if you, if you love him, you can breathe. See? That automatically makes you breathe. With all of your mind, you got to be breathing. And with all of your heart, that means your heart got to pump blood. You got to be breathing. And with all of your strength, well, if you don't breathe, you have no strength. And with all of your soul, which is the integrity of your nature, because you don't have a soul, you are a soul. And that's the honesty of yourself. You are going to be constantly breathing. So this is truly the highest good. Now, if you're constantly breathing, can they bury you? And if you're constantly breathing till midnight eternity, will they ever bury you? So you see, immortality is only lack of your in the opportunity to be constantly breathing. But it's too simple to accept. Whether you actually understand what you're saying to yourself, you see, there is no magic, it's just a matter of taking it step by step, breath after breath. Right. Right, and until you see the obviousness, the thing is very nebulous. But that's why you have to clear out the nebulousness of the language and then see the actual truth. And it's not who you are, but what you are. So we're going to be here until midnight eternity because Big Daddy doesn't go out of business. So if he doesn't go out of business, where the hell are we going to go? He can't put us no place. We can only shut down our individuality into a condition called non-relating, non-consciousness called death. We cannot shut down our totality because that is God itself. How can you shut down God, the totality of you which is life? So I'm a God of the living, Jesus said. My God is of the living, not of the dead. So we have this pastor who has a principle set up to phase out itself. It would have to be a principle that would be here in permanency. And the principle would have to be a single principle, one. It's the only number that can phase itself out. Divide one by one, and what you got? Figure out one. So where is it going to go? And you are one with it. Therefore, you are the same principle. I and the Father are one. The I in you is the principle in you. So where are you going to go? But you've got to have the opportunity to breathe, to recognize it. And you want that to come into understanding of your consciousness so you appreciate it moment to moment by loving the opportunity. So that's how it comes that love the Lord, love the I-ness that is singularly set up as you, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So that doesn't mean it doesn't become unconscious. It is totally ever conscious. And loving it is watching. Because you can't own it. You can't be possessed out of it. It's not possible. So as long as you're breathing and watching, then the heart is in a state of reverence. Then the breath itself is the strength to say that reverence is continuous. That the integrity of the honesty with yourself, knowing that you don't have to pretend to breathe. You're breathing. Plain and simple breathing. You're one with the truth. Then your neighbor as yourself. Anything next to you is subject to the same laws. It doesn't matter if it's man, woman, or tree. These are objects next to you. And they have the same conditions to live through. And you have to reach out and accept them as reflections of you. And why? Because the same I am principle is locked up in them. The same connotations and involvement of functioning is locked up in them. And they are just a reflection of what you have recognized, what you understand you are put together as. So the freedom is there automatically. So you're not here working to save anybody. You're working primarily to what?
Now, in that eternity, so as one with forgiveness. wake up again because they're in the dream until that point. So, and they will keep dreaming, which the lifetime is the same as the dreams at night until they wake up.
And then they're told whenever they wake up, what they did was the most simple thing they could have done a long time ago. Seek the kingdom of God, which is inside of them, and it's how it operates, its righteousness. That is, look at your body and see what makes it function and how it operates. And it will free you from all the so-called fixations of what you think you can acquire or overrule. If you want to show off in the behavior, you'll sooner or later find out that your breath is all you can look at inside of you that keeps you functioning, and it makes you feel that you can own the world or be the greatest competent person in the world or perform all that. But that breath will make you feel it. And then after a while, you don't need to perform miracles or you don't need to own a single thing. Your breath provides you opportunity to live life consciously, free men, women, God of yourself. And in that state, the highest opportunity is the breathing to experience ever new joy. Ever new joy means the opportunity to use ever new models. Think of that last statement. The opportunity to use as a new model. That's the bonus. Would you not like to have a new model equipment come into you every time to get you more opportunity to see the work you're doing? That's what I mean, as a new model, because the creativeness is ongoing and the opportunity to use it is there. But as I say, you're going to own it all the time, it'll break down. So you really can never own anything outside the engine. They all fall apart at some point. But the opportunity to use it in its ever new model, this is our option, this is our right. I couldn't own nothing. I can have the opportunity to use it. And in the opportunity to use it, the need is provided already. The need is the want. The need is provided to take care of the opportunity to use it. Like Yogananda, when he first use a brand new Cadillac after the war. That was funny how he says, here is an ordinary Cadillac and all these people around him. And you know, one man is saying his mind, if he's a swami, why is he driving in a brand new Cadillac? That's all about life. He should be saying, no? So he looks around and he sees the man and he read the man's mind and he surprises the man by calling him by his name, Mr. Johnson. And they're going to show up. So I did not ask this Cadillac. Just give it to me as a present. In fact, it's a very poor expression of man's creativity looking for some better model like yours. I mean, that's a pure beat of fixation to hold. I want to be in the position to use it. And so the models come up every time to be used. So when you place a limitation on yourself, then it's a limitation. But if you don't do that, and you put the consciousness to flow, then the consciousness flows to this. And that's what they're trying to tell us all, that we must turn this attitude on as we meet here. We must develop this consciousness that a spoken word is our privilege, our inheritance over the apple. The other day somebody brought me a book, and inside the book was a cartoon, and it said the cartoon reminded them of me. So I read the cartoon, and it was this: I'm the only brick that doesn't break down called a diamond.
That
was the cartoon. So if you don't break down, you're a diamond.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. That's not a gentleman. Really, today when we get together, we have two choices. I speak or you ask questions. So, how about you ask questions? Well, I know you have a lot in your mind and you'd like to have it cleared up. If you can answer, that's fine. But this helps us to see a common relationship sometimes when we ask questions. That one person may have the same question, the same identical question. But in this way, when we ask questions, there is most of us get the answers coming out. And they hear from different viewpoints. So, I love to ask first fact.
Pulling your head out of the ground is fact, shaking your bones and moving down the bone. Look around in this room. There are no losers here. And the fact is, not a statement of imagination. The firm that got to the firm is the end. And then they cut the cord after 9 months, and they stayed at the hearing on time. They appeared. So everybody in this room did it. So there are no losers. But you can think all your life, you're a loser. Be my guest. That's back to the record. And that's before you head out to the ground. There's nothing to be afraid of, no, because you know that we didn't grant. But how you move from that point and stand up and walk is the next step. Knowing that you're a winner, then you have two things to do. Go fast or go slow. Now when you go too fast, you might fall over the place and hurt yourself. So the doctors call it hyper. When you go too slow, you leave it behind. So the doctors call it hypo. So if you want to keep up with the race, you got to go in and keep fast and slow. But don't panic. And every moment is breathing. Because every moment is breathing. Because we breathe, we are conscious and we can relate. And so, for the first 18 years of your life, you have a problem. Before you're born, the individuals that are talking to you are called mom and pop. After you're born, they're called parents, and they're paying the rent for you for 18 years. Mm-hmm. And you're stuck with it until they throw you out, and they're on again to start be yourself. See, you can't get around it, so if you don't perform, they'll find every way to make you recognize that the 18 years means that you're not ready. And that's the and at the end of 18 years, at the end of high school, you have two choices. Go to work and stand your own 2 feet, or find a way to increase your education. And you have 12 years to do before you continue. Practical. So from 18 to 30, those 12 years is called muck-up. 30 years of muck-up and 30 years to heal up. All you know is pulling your head out of the ground. Because you look around and see, by that time, if you didn't have any breaking up of the body or sickness, you get it too pretty good. But if you start to feel the aches and the pains of 30 going on to 40, you've got to start cleaning up your act. So that's where we come into the condition of the first 30 years you're left with nothing. Nobody can be bright with that. And then after that, you've got to clean up because you're including yourself. So I couldn't deprive you of the joy of mucking up the first 30 years. So that's not it. And the next 30 years is spent cleaning it up because there's a virtue in it. The virtue of compassion. Now if you're married and have children by then, you're going to appreciate the strength more. You don't have to tell him the same thing for you. So we learn to appreciate our strength after 40 years of it. Then we question life as to the possible value of it. Is it really worth living every day, running down the highway, trying to stop the traffic, and see if it's practical? Every night you go to sleep, you gotta tell yourself before you go to sleep, you're gonna wake up next day to go to work. Sound familiar? You gotta get up before, you gotta program your brain before you go to sleep. Then you worry before you go to sleep if you can pay the bills tomorrow. And we live this kind of agony practically every night before we go to sleep. And yet we fall asleep and we forget practically everything that we said to ourselves before we go to sleep. Now comes the crazy question. Do you know who you are when you come to sleep? Is it a man or a woman? And if you don't wake up, you still don't know who you are, and they're going to bury you. Are you ready with your head in the ground then? Right? Or you're stuck. And 30, 40 years or 50 years, you went through life, trying to keep up with the environment, and yet deep down you haven't come to any acceptance. Is life worth living? Is it the sleep of your bed? That's it. And then we don't know who we are when we come to sleep. And if we question beyond that point, and anyone hearing you talk about that, you're crazy. They're trying to recommend some doctrine. You dare not talk about knowing who you are when you come to sleep. The rich man and the poor man, wise man and the ignorant man both have the same problem. They don't know who they are when they come to sleep. But if any one of them discovers who they are when they come to sleep, then they may be able to get out of the frustration, panic, fear of living in the mouth. Because there is nothing here but mouth. And mouth doesn't have friends nor enemies. Mouth only has a sense of confidence. You confide in your beingness that you are alive, you breathe, and you don't panic, and you can cope. Anything the environment can show you. Simply because you breathe. But if you don't breathe, it doesn't matter what it shows you, it won't bug you. If you breathe and you can cope with it, you're still on top of the dog or the journey of knowing what you are. And last but not least, when you know what you are, understand the truth, and can get up and live without sleeping anymore. You have found out what all the great things in the world have discovered. Not yet discovered world. You and the creative life are one in the three. There isn't anything here but creative life existing in different forms. Pure breath. And the understanding is a freedom. And that's what the brother Jesus says, free men are Lord Jesus. And I am a part of all. You and the creative principle are one in the three. That's when I find a God sitting on the throne of the human again. But you can tell yourself you live to die, or you live to retire to die. And when you get there, you'll be disappointed because you didn't do anything for you. Because the brother Jesus said, I, God, am of the living, I'm not of the dead.